This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
John Callier, will you go round with me?
Don't fuck with me, fella!
Oh, I feel so damn sick and dirty, I can't stand it anymore.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Is butter a curve?
I had a hunch you might be a real romantic.
We were decoys. He used us as bait. We procured for you.
We could have had a good life together. Fucking real good life. But you need water, Dennis. So what we got now is broke-back mouth.
You are listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9. Alan and Daniel taking you through for the next hour.
On Halloween, Dan.
On Halloween Eve.
On Halloween. It's Halloween Eve. I can tell it's Halloween because it's definitely a ghost town here at Joy. There is, I think we're the only souls here at the moment apart from our lovely helper on the desk.
And of course, Matt, who did a wonderful job reading the news, and we remembered to say thank you.
But Matt's out the door. He's gone.
He's dressing up as a Joker, I think.
Okay, yeah.
So if anyone sees a Joker on the street,
the Jared
always
Jared
does such a wonderful job reading the news, and we always forget to thank him. Yeah, so right. Thank you, Matt, for doing a wonderful job at reading the news.
And we should also thank Ruby and Sarah for the Informer
crew. Absolutely. Mm. Yes. So tonight we've decided we're not doing a Halloween show because we're a bit Halloweened out. It's all anyone's been talking about for a few weeks now. So we've decided to tackle something really meaty instead.
That's right. We're talking about transgenerational trauma.
It's a big topic, Alan.
Now Daniel, you'll have to explain to people what transgenerational trauma actually is.
Well,
what is it?
You're the academic in the room.
Okay, rightio. Well, I'll run with that, Daniel.
Yeah.
You know, seeing so.
Thank
you. Know,
you you're Dr. Alan.
You're definitely the intellectual between the pair of
please.
Us. You know,
the flattery.
You know, because you know, I happen to love Michelle Obama's family motto, which is when they go low, we go high.
Okay.
And whenever I hear that, I think of you and I, Daniel, because when you take the high road, I take the low road. So you know, we've got our own little presidential dynamic happening here. So
okay.
So anyway, transgenerational trauma. You know, just to sort of give you a definition of that, it's transgenerational trauma is the historical trauma that is transmitted across generations, and it's the trauma that's transferred from the first generation of survivors that directly experienced or witnessed the traumatic events to the second and subsequent generations.
Sure. The I mean, that's a great working definition, but the issue with it is this idea that there has to be some big event, because we know that's not how transgenerational trauma really works.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, trauma can be experienced in everyday mundane events.
Mm-hmm.
And what transgenerational trauma is the way that trauma is kind of passed down from one generation to the other if it's not properly apprehended or processed or somehow dealt with.
That's right.
And, you know, we're talking about this tonight because, of course, just a few weeks ago, we were given all at once every episode of season 3 of Transparent. And what a fantastic, phenomenal series this is. Some of the best writing on TV.
I'd agree with you.
Watching this series, you know, season 3, but certainly season 1 and season 2 as well, is you get a real sense of the trauma that is being kind of passed down from generation to generation. And the series does a really wonderful job at evoking that. And so Gina and I watched it a few weeks back, and we looked at each other and we thought, you know, how can we not run a show on transgenerational trauma when this series is telling us that it is really important and bringing our attention to it? And
I agree, Daniel. I think it is very important, and it's important for everyone's day-to-day life, because this is not just with the family of Moira and Shelley. This happens in everyone's family. It's happened in your family. It's happened in my family, and I think this helps us to get some sort of sense of what that really means and how we can overcome this sort of trauma.
The wonderful thing is, though, that we were able to curate, as it were, a really, really wonderful and diverse but in many ways similar.
That's right.
Selection of films and TV shows that actually deal with this topic. And it strikes me that it's not something that's spoken about very often. It's not something that's dealt with very often. Mm-hmm. But there are some really seminal classic queer texts that really explore this theme really, really well. And those are the texts that we're going to be looking at tonight. So, of mm-hmm. course, we've already, you know, said Transparent really does deal with this idea of transgenerational trauma mm-hmm. in a really, really meaningful and effective and touching way. Oh, yeah. But there are other texts too, like, mm-hmm. for instance, Beginners, which we looked at a few weeks back.
That's right.
And, you know, there's been a lot said about Beginners, but it hasn't really been discussed how the theme of transgenerational trauma is explored in Beginners. And so too, you know, Angels in America, which...
One of your favourites.
Well, I do like it. I can't deny that. But it does deal with this in a really, really meaningful way.
Mm-hmm.
And then the really great thing is that the Jewish International Film Festival has started, and there's a documentary playing there called Ada's Secrets, mm-hmm. which has received all kinds of critical praise. Time magazine called it a powerful film. The Toronto Star said it's a complex potpourri of drama, intrigue, secrets, lies, and tearful reunions. And it is a really compelling documentary. But I was able to sit down with Alon Schwartz, the director, and talk to him about, you know, what this documentary says about the idea of trauma being passed down within a family. And that is, it's that trauma and the way it's passed down without being properly mourned that mm-hmm. makes this documentary so powerful.
But yeah, and I think what you touched there about the issue of truth and secrets, and Ada's Secrets makes that very clear, that there are a number of secrets that are kept within this family across a very long period of time, over 50 years. And I think this is what we also find as well in a lot
in Transparent.
In Transparent.
In Beginners, in Angels in America. This idea that if a secret...
Walk
on water, absolutely.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's interesting because when we put these films and TV shows side by side, mm-hmm. they have two things in common. One... there is LGBTIQ content,
which is
why we're looking at them tonight.
Mm-hmm.
They all deal with, you know, how queer identity is informed by transgenerational trauma, mm-hmm. which is, it's so fascinating. And that's why we're looking at it tonight. But also, they're all Jewish, aren't they? All the characters are Jewish.
They are. We've got a very strong Jewish theme connecting all of these.
Which is timely for the Jewish International Film Festival.
That's true.
We are in the throes of that here in Melbourne. Just started last week. And we looked at Barash last week.
That's right. And can I say, Daniel, before we go on, there is a line. There's a scene in Transparent where Sarah's husband or ex-husband,
Len is
at the Haneni, where there's a gathering on Shabbat. And Len pipes up and says, you know, he says, you know what, if there is such a term, then you could describe me as Jew curious. And yeah. And I immediately identified with Len at that stage. Because,
are you Jew curious, Alan?
Because I think I am over the course of the last 12 months. I've learned a lot about Israel, Israeli issues, and also the Jewish faith and Jewish issues. So I'd say that, yeah, definitely, I'm Jew curious.
Well, you know, that's because there are so many films coming out of Israel. It's such a vibrant cinema scene mm-hmm. For such a small place. And, of course, we looked at that when we looked at Israeli cinema. But it is interesting to see the intersection of Jewish identity and queer identity in these documentaries and films and TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other films and TV shows that deal with the idea of transgenerational trauma in the lives of LGBTIQ people that we're not dealing with tonight. So many of Almodovar's films, we've been talking a lot about him recently because mm-hmm. of the release of Julieta. So many of Almodovar's films acutely are concerned with this kind of kinship between different generations of women.
That's right.
That's so Almodovarian. And even, you know, pretty much every text that Christos Tsolkas has written has been turned into a film or a TV show. And these are all, you know, also very concerned with the idea of trauma being passed down from generation to generation and that kind of lineal chain.
And it's such a rich breeding ground for content, because this transgenerational trauma exists in the form of migration, race, gender, sexuality
and the sexual abuse. Great thing is that we're looking at so much of it tonight.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And we're going to kick it off with, you know, a series that we both love, of course, Transparent. And I mean, for people listening who don't know who don't know what Transparent is, it is a seminal series.
It is
created by Jill Soloway. It's won a slew of awards, but it centers around the Pfefferman family, and you know, a lot of people would say it centers around Moira and her transition, of course, a 70-year-old transitioning from male to female.
Right.
But the film is not just about Moira; it is just as much about Moira's family.
And that's right. I think in Transparent, they also mention that it's not the individual who transitions, but it's also the family that transitions. And we see this transition occurring in Transparent 3.
This is the cast of Transparent talking about the way that family is impacted within Transparent.
You didn't have one of these.
Are you kidding?
Sarah, I'm gluten-free.
You having a problem with gluten?
Yeah, she is. She's having a lot of problems with gluten.
Upon first glance, they may not seem very typical because the father of the family is transitioning to become a woman. And that's really not what the story is about. The story is about everyone in a family having secrets, hiding from each other, and learning how to transform.
This family has been static up until this first episode when a bomb goes off. It's impossible not to change when one person in a family does.
That was The Pfeffermans and Transparent, and it's such a rich series because, you know, what I love about this series is that it is like being with your family, because, you know, when you're with your family, like, you know, because you're so close how flawed everyone is, but you can't help but love them because of those flaws. And that is the way that we, well, most of the time, and that's the way that we approach a lot of the characters in this series, because they are so deeply flawed, all of these characters, the three children and their parents, and they're all kind of fleshed out and explored across each series.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, they're so lovable.
They are lovable, and the dialogue that they have between each other is sometimes very raw and honest and confronting conversations.
Oh, very confronting.
And sometimes I when I'm watching Transparent, I think, oh, wow, you know, I'd love to be involved in a family that was like that, you know?
Well, we're going to be talking more about the Pfefferman family right after this.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9, where we are tackling the very meaty topic of transgenerational trauma in queer film.
And we have received a message from Dave. Dave has asked us, where's Gina? I miss her already. Dave, Gina is out trick-or-treating with her nephews, and we miss her as well. So we hope that we can fill the void.
And Richard has also messaged in saying transgenerational grief is probably so prominent in Jewish characters because it's coupled with transgenerational guilt. Just ask Fran Fine.
She did mention that off air about the nanny.
I did mention Fran Fine.
You know,
she's such a trendsetter, good old Fran Fine, and we'll have to do a show on her sometime. But
yeah,
we're talking about Transparent, which really does tackle transgenerational trauma in a really effective, nuanced, meaningful way, in a way that not many TV series or films have.
That's
and
right.
And I think one of the wonderful reasons why is because we're now just finished the third season, and each season picks a very different aspect of the Pfefferman family history to meditate on.
That's right.
And to explore. And so, of course, in the second season, we had this really meaningful flashback sequence, a number of them, to Berlin.
Back to the Weimar Republic.
And some issues that I suppose people that Moira Pfefferman is a descendant of were having with their own gender identity. And, of course, then it was under the auspices of Magnus Hirschfeld.
He was that famous German psychologist who developed a sexuality clinic.
For sexuality was one of the first people to deal with a lot of the issues we're now kind of indebted to him for dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
But And then we get the third season that deals with the idea of transgenerational trauma in a really different way and picks up on some areas in Shelley's history.
That's right.
And also Mort or Moira's history, and kind of explores those histories as well. And the effect of that is we start to get this series of generations and see how the issues that are dealt with in each of those generations are now being processed by the three children in this film, in this TV series.
And I think some of that trauma is being processed effectively and being acknowledged. And as we've just discussed before, the only way to overcome transgenerational trauma is to develop some apprehension or self-awareness around it.
Yeah.
And I think we'll see here, what we see in Transparent is we actually see that some of these issues are being resolved as the family and the individuals themselves are actually developing that self-awareness and that apprehension. But what we also see too is we see other traumas that are being perpetuated because they're not being acknowledged. Processed. And dealt with. And
well, I want to pick up grieved. On that. And more, I should say. Because Alice Miller, who's a very renowned German psychoanalyst, mm-hmm. says, experience has taught us that we have only one enduring weapon in the struggle against mental illness, the emotional discovery of the truth about the unique history of our childhood.
Yeah.
That's the opening line from her text, mm-hmm. The Drama of the Gifted Child. And that's what we see in Transparent.
We do.
We really do see this journey of discovery, you know, this slow crystallization, this transparency around, I was working towards that, around the histories of these characters. Mm-hmm. And some of the characters really do successfully apprehend and process some of that grief. And perhaps the character who does it best, funnily enough, is Shelley.
That's right. So Shelley is the former wife, the ex-wife of Moira, and the mother to the Pfeffermans, and she's often been an object of ridicule.
And she is in the third season, and we're ridiculing her the whole way through until this climactic moment in the final episode. And you know the season is great because it really does explore Shelley's history and her childhood and some of the events which we're not going to spoil. We won't say what those events are, but they are controversial,
mm-hmm.
And I have some problems with them for a number of reasons,
mm-hmm. yep.
Because they do pick up on some tropes that appear in a lot of queer texts that I think are very unhelpful.
That's right.
I'm not going to say what they are because I don't want to give too much about the series away for people who haven't seen the third series, the third season. But
you can also see too. That's why these flashbacks are so effective because it helps informs the viewer of what these traumas actually are and how they're impacting on their behavior today or that's being represented.
Well, the interesting thing in these films and TV shows is that so often the means for kind of representing this intergenerational trauma is relationships and the way that we connect with one another. And the Pfeffermann children, they all have really damaged relationships and have a lot of trouble kind of having relationships, much like the lead character in Beginners, Ewan McGregor's character.
That's right.
And what we see in Beginners, and we'll talk about this later, is that that's really because his parents could never really have proper relationships for whatever reason. For his father, it was because he was gay and couldn't admit it.
And that's right. There were secrets. There were secrets and a lack of truth.
Well, that's because the characters don't have the tools to actually realize and apprehend that truth.
Yeah.
But someone who does, funnily enough, is Shelley, because she is so bumbling all the way through the three seasons, and then she has this wonderful moment of transparency at the end of the season, and this is what we get.
When I was a young girl, something happened to me that made me stop being who I really was. I stopped growing in every sense of the word. I have always been drawn to men who wanted to live in the darkness of a secret. Who am I? I didn't know. I didn't know, and I didn't want to know. I was in a cocoon. I'm broke. I'm happy. I'm poor, but I'm kind. I'm short, but I'm healthy. Yeah. I'm
I'm loving, but I'm hopeful.
Such a remarkable scene.
It was a glorious moment.
And so brave reveled, yeah. of the film, of the makers of this show as well. Jill Soloway, wow, she's quite a talent. And yeah. and this sequence, you know, Shelley is developing this show, this performance, all the way through. And it's so, it's Shelley, you know.
It's a one-woman show. Yeah. She's discovered social media. She's discovered Twitter. And she has 148 followers. Which automatically leads you to think that she can produce her own show and go global. But what was truly powerful in the scene is that you actually see her children and Moira transform in front of you as well. So they also have their transparent moment, and you can see.
Well, they approach Moira with the they approach Shelley with the same kind of mockery and contempt that we do much the way through the season, and then here she is. Doing this crazy performance, really, on a cruise ship. It's just so bizarre. But it has a profound impact on them, doesn't it? You see their reaction, some kind of realization, some kind of apprehension.
Yep.
And that little monologue before the song where she talks about there being some secret, her struggling with her identity, her not wanting to process.
And her denial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really does tap into to so many of the themes that we're looking at tonight, as does the series.
And I think, you know, if I was to look at that in a metaphor, it was Shelley was hiding her light under a bushel. And in this performance, she discards her disguise, she discards that bushel, and she actually gets to shine for the very first time. And her children really get to see who she really is. And you can see that they admire her for that. I thought it was beautiful.
Yeah, it's certainly a beautiful scene, but this series is just so strong. It's so well written. It's so powerful. It's so provocative and evocative.
And I think it can connect to absolutely everybody. It should be able to connect to every audience, because there is a little bit of your family in this family. There's a little bit of you in these characters.
What Soloway manages to do so well is use some of the more common and transcendental issues like family to get some of those more edgy, less frequently talked about issues like transitioning.
That's right.
Across the line, and transgenerational trauma across the line. She uses those broader issues of family as the vehicle to do that. And it's just so clever. It's so inspired. It's so well written. So for people who aren't familiar with Transparent, this is Transparent.
When we look up at the sky, we're not seeing the universe as it is today, but as it was millions of years ago. The multitudinous past of every star, each one a clue to our origins.
Do you plan on getting breasts?
Two, please.
Do you plan on undergoing gender reassignment surgery?
I'm going to have to get back to you on that one.
It's a family affair.
My sisters are here. They're sneaking in the back. It's a sneak attack.
One child grows up to be.
Do you know there is such a thing as inherited trauma in your actual DNA?
How are your parents?
The usual, you know, mom's good, dad's a woman.
Another child grows up to be.
Did you let yourself in?
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Mom, what are you doing here? It's not your day.
Yeah, I'm aware. I just forgot my yoga mat.
Mom, love of both of them. You see, it's in the blood.
You don't trust me.
I know what you're doing. Expecting me to disappoint you?
It's a family affair. It's a family affair.
You are all monsters.
That's a tad dramatic.
Are you drunk?
I want to come by. I want to see Mom.
Don't you dare. You let that woman get off this planet without knowing about this.
I'm out there. I'm living. I mean, it's a mess. Everything's blowing up.
got to figure out who you are.
I'm trying to do the right thing.
Yes, queen.
Yes, queen.
Yes.
Yes, queen.
Okay, let's not, can we not do that anymore?
Welcome to our family.
You want my head up or you want my head down?
I think chin up for you, sir.
Did he call me sir?
Yes. All right.
We're done.
Let's go.
We're done.
Wow, what a powerful series. If you haven't seen Transparent, you really have to see it. It is some of the best TV in as long as I can remember.
It is. I think I managed to binge all 10 episodes, one after the other, and it was effortless. Mm. Effortless.
I love that idea at the beginning of that montage of the stars, and each star is a kind of clue to our history, because that's really what we're talking about this evening. It's about these little clues that we get that somehow inform who we are, and that's ultimately what we're looking at tonight.
That's right.
This idea of transgenerational trauma. Mm-hmm. It's really just something that's being passed down from generations before that somehow informs the people that we are. And it's really interesting to think of that in a queer context, because, you know, at the heart of queer cinema is this struggle with identity.
That's right.
And you know, so transgenerational trauma really does do a lot to kind of mediate that identity struggle and give us some clues about why we're having that struggle.
And I think if I was to go along with that, I think in particular where we're seeing the events of the past, how they're informing how people relate to each other today, and in particular from a queer perspective and from a homophobia perspective, which is something which those sorts of ideas and mindsets are really transmitted from previous generations. They go on, you grow up with them. You're quite often, people are brought up with a homophobic approach or a racist approach or some sort of bigotry or prejudice, and how does that affect us as queer people and as gay people, and how do we internalize that? And I think that comes up a lot for queer people with their own internal homophobia that comes along.
You are listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You're on Joy 94.9 on Outtakes, and you are with Daniel and Alan. Gina is out trick-or-treating at the moment with her nephew, so hopefully she'll be bringing in some of the extra chocolate that she didn't get to eat.
No
to
such
next
thing
week.
As excess chocolate.
No such thing as excess chocolate. Gina, if you're listening, bring chocolate.
Look, we are talking about transgenerational trauma in queer film and TV this evening, and so far we've had a really good look at Transparent, mm-hmm. And it is such a phenomenal and such a well-written series. We're going to turn our attention now to a documentary that's showing as part of the Jewish International Film Festival. The documentary is Ada's Secrets, and it really is about the effect of unspoken trauma mm-hmm. on generations to come.
That's right. So Ada is a young Jewish woman who she
gets sent off to work for the Germans during the war, and exactly what happens to her during the war we never really find out.
No, we don't, do we?
The interesting thing about this documentary is it raises a lot of questions that it doesn't answer mm-hmm. in the way that a film couldn't get away with, mm-hmm. but because this is a documentary and because it is so compelling, the story that the documentary charts is just so compelling.
That's right.
We forgive the fact that we don't find out the answers, and somehow we can sit with it in the way that we couldn't a narrative for some reason. I don't really know what it is that lets the documentary get away with that, but it does raise a lot of questions that we see the journey of the people in this documentary trying to answer and unpack. Mm-hmm. Some of them they do, And some of them, they don't.
That's right. And I think the reason why we do find some resolution with Aida and this documentary is because the two main focal points of this are two brothers, yeah. Itzhak and Shep, who were separated when they were very young. So one went to Israel, one went to Canada.
Yeah.
And Itzhak, the older brother, grew up thinking that he was an only child.
Yeah.
Only to discover in his 70s
that he has a brother. And there are certain other discoveries which come up during the documentary, which we're not going to give away, but do lend the documentary so much of its compelling kind of nature.
Mm-hmm.
So Aida, she's interned, she works for the Germans. She then lives in Bergen-Belsen.
A displaced persons camp.
Yeah.
So this is something that we don't see a lot of when we're looking at this period of time.
The documentary portrays it as quite a vibrant mm-hmm. scene after the war in Bergen-Belsen, and it's quite shocking, really. But the documentary tries to unpack exactly what happened to her there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who the father of these two boys are.
It is, yeah. And I think what was also mentioned is that at this period of time, a lot of the Jewish people who were in these displaced persons camps, because they'd gone through such a horrific experience throughout the war, they were very self-centered. And I think there was some commentary there where every person was out for themselves. They're out to survive, looking for where they were going to go next, because this displaced persons camp was just a transition. It was a holding pattern for the start of the rest of their life.
Well, that's really interesting.
That's what we find here is,
well, if you think about that in the context of Transparent, which we've mm-hmm. just been talking about, I mean, mm-hmm. you could well have just been describing Moira, really, because for Moira, everything is about Moira.
That's right. Everything's about Moira, and she's been in a holding pattern her whole life.
And you can see why. The series does such a wonderful job at making that understandable. But the same is true of Angels in America, mm-hmm. this fellow who leaves his partner when his partner gets sick because he just can't handle it. And he has to, you know, struggle with, you know, being self-centered. You know, he apprehends his own self-centeredness, but we see him struggle with it all the same. And so that's in many ways what this documentary really taps into as well. But of course, when I sat down with Alon, the director of this documentary, I wanted to ask what compelled him to make the documentary, because we see all these secrets kind of unfold over the course of the documentary.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, it struck me, you know, how did Alon know that the story was going to turn out this way? And he didn't. I mean, he had no idea that there were going to be so many layers of secrecy here. So it's just, I mean, I guess it was serendipitous that it turned out to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this is what Alon had to say when I asked him about why he made this documentary.
I think it was mainly guilt. I felt very guilty. It's a story that I heard as a young boy. I was told not to tell. My grandfather specifically, when I asked him about it, held me by the shoulders and shook me very hard and said, "This is a secret. Do you know what a secret is? You're never to tell this even to your parents." And I was the only one from my generation that heard the story, this crazy story of my uncle having a brother. And when Isaac approached me and told me that he thought he had a brother, it all came out. It was really, I felt guilty, and I said, okay, there may be a potential story here. And rather quickly, we understood that we have an amazing story here.
Why was it a secret? Why were you so sworn to secrecy?
I think that the people that swore me to secrecy didn't really know the reason. I think the rumor was that Isaac's father was a German, possibly a Nazi. And in the 1950s, and of course in the 1970s, with the trauma of the Holocaust, being a bloodline of a German non-Jew was not something you wanted to go around with. And he was brought into Israel as a little boy, and the sheer possibility that this is the story scared the hell out of people. So I think the older generation wanted my uncle to grow up as a Zionist, as a Jew, as an Israeli.
Yeah.
And they didn't want this possible connection to German blood to be out there.
And that does come through in the documentary. And certainly that was my understanding as the documentary progressed. But without giving too much away, certain things happen toward the end of the documentary that make us start to question whether or not that really was the reason for the secret.
Yeah, I think Aida had many secrets. Well, one thing I still don't understand to this day fully is why she wasn't in touch with Shep, for example, with the brother. So there's many things that are partially solved or not solved, and I think that's part of what's interesting about this film. It makes you think, I think. I think we'll never know who was the real father there. That's the thing. I think nobody knows. I think Ida didn't know who the real father was either.
That's really the amazing thing about the documentary, because if this were a Hollywood film, and it, you know, it could well be, the subject matter is that interesting, those answers would be given to us. There are so many questions left unanswered, and I suppose that's the way life is, really.
Yeah, that's the big difference between making a documentary and possibly yeah. making a remake, which we're actually considering to do right now. But I think the magic of documentary, and which makes it very, very strong, is that you get the real-life situation where not all things are known, and you hear different ideas of people about identities and about how they view history, and I think that's very interesting, actually.
Clearly, family is central to this documentary, the importance of family.
You're talking about two brothers which were born in a refugee camp or DP camp after the war, were separated at a very young age, grew up in entirely different environments, surroundings, educational systems, yet after almost 70 years, they meet and, you know, they become brothers. And it was really interesting to film it and to see the relationship that developed between these two almost 70-year-old men, and in many ways are like two children.
Oh, you could see when Shepsel was introduced to his mother, he became a child. You know, the way he was acting, the things that he was saying were very, very like a child. And she as well was acting in a way that didn't befit her age. But the other really interesting theme that comes up is, of course, the idea of a secret, and the idea in this documentary of the trauma and the pain and the fear that underscores those secrets.
Yeah, I think that's part. You correctly said that a big part of this film is the secrets and the results. What are the results of holding secrets for 65 years? And it's true. I mean, the fact that Shep and Ida, his mom, meet after they haven't met for 65 years, puts them immediately into the instinctive behavior of a mother and a little baby. What this almost 70-year-old man needs is for her to give him a hug and give him a kiss and acknowledge him. And this is something that's been important to him his whole life. And then, of course, later on, not only about this, it's about very tough questions that Shep has to his mother about why she didn't look for him and why she didn't tell him about Isaac and who was the real father and what happened there, because it's a very, very strange story.
Well, I think one of the more compelling components of the documentary is that we know that there's been something terrible has happened. We know that there's been a lot of trauma, but we are left to think about what that could be. Clearly, we know something has happened.
Yes, absolutely. And we don't exactly know what happened during the DP camp era for her. We do know some of the things that hurt her, but we do also have information about what happened to her right before the war ended and where she was during the war. And what I will say is that I just came back from the Warsaw International Film Festival, and for the Polish people, it was a very common story. The Nazis didn't only kill millions of Jews, they also enslaved millions and millions of teenagers from Poland and Ukraine. For the Polish people, many stories like Ida exist. I mean, these are 13, 14-year-old girls that were taken from their families, put into German homes as slaves, sometimes sex slaves, sometimes factory workers. And this is a very, very common story.
But the really interesting thing is that a lot of people have acted in the same way that Ada has, which is to be silent and simply not talk. And I think what we see in this film is that there are consequences for that, and those consequences are experienced by the next generation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a very common thing that people didn't talk. Some of them didn't talk because of psychological needs to move forward and a need not to touch those very painful moments. Others didn't talk because of that, but also because they had things to hide.
Yeah,
they were either ashamed, you know, of this, of things that happened to them, and it does resonate generations after, and not only to the kids, but also to the grandchildren.
I think that's what the documentary is about in so many ways. This new generation here having to somehow process the grief that their mother experienced.
That's absolutely correct. And at the end, I think they both come out better than how they started, both because they have each other, but also because they learn to accept their identity. They learn to accept that some secrets they will never know. And they look at life with acceptance. And that's a very, very big thing for them.
Well, that was my chat with Alon Schwartz, the director of Ada's Secrets, a documentary showing as part of the Jewish International Film Festival this month. And it's so interesting listening to him talk because, you know, we've just been talking about Transparent and Shelley's transformation and accepting process mm-hmm. of acceptance in Transparent. And that's really what Alon was talking about there, you know, this idea of accepting and apprehending grief that you've been passed down makes you so much stronger.
And that's what we see with both Shep and Itzhak.
Oh, absolutely.
But also, too, understanding that there were some secrets that their mother was just not willing to share and how they accepted that, even though I would still struggle. I would definitely struggle
with knowing that
secret is still there. You'd have to, like for me, I'd have to keep digging. So I admire them for their equanimity to be able to move on from that.
You are listening to Outtakes here on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ Community Radio Station, Joy 94.9.
You are listening to Outtakes here on Joy 94.9, where we are looking at the way that transgenerational trauma is kind of tackled in queer film and TV.
And we'd also like to hear from you, our listener.
Oh, absolutely.
And
message in on 0427JOY949 or email us at onair@joy.org.au and tell us what you think about the way that queer cinema handles some of these really meaty issues, which is exactly what Richard has done.
Yep. So Richard has texted in and he said, it's interesting to think of transgenerational trauma in the queer community. Although not strictly a genetic family transfer of grief, queer people can adopt the trauma of the whole coming out decades from before and it's a lot to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good idea, this idea that transgenerational trauma isn't just transmitted within a family, but transmitted within communities.
Communities, yeah.
So what does that mean for the LGBTIQ community?
Mm-hmm.
And I think a series that deals with that very well is Angels in America.
Perfect segue. Thanks, Richard.
Now, there's so many different components to the way that Angels in America deals with transgenerational trauma. Angels in America, of course, it's a Tony Kushner play.
Yeah.
It's been listed as one of the most important plays of all time. And
it's a miniseries from 2000.
Well, it was turned into a miniseries.
Yeah.
Directed by Mike Nichols,
mm-hmm.
who did Birdcage, amongst many other things.
Yeah.
And it has a stellar cast.
It does.
Meryl Streep, Emma Thompson, Al Pacino,
yes.
Patrick Wilson, Jeffrey Wright, and it won a slew of awards as well, not just for the acting, which it did, but for, you know, so many different things, because it is a really phenomenal series, I think.
And I think it's the main arc of Angels in America is dealing with the AIDS epidemic. And so that's what we see a lot. We actually see exposure with the core theme really is dealing with HIV.
It's unquestionably about HIV and AIDS,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know that that's what this play is really about. I mean, I think the AIDS and HIV was a very timely vehicle
mm-hmm.
to explore a number of other issues. And, of course, we're not going to have time to unpack all of them tonight because it's just such a rich and pregnant text.
Yep.
But
so it was the vehicle. For our discussion.
No. Not just for transgenerational trauma, but for ideas around religion and belief and family and, you know, so many different ideas. Change, you mm-hmm. know, change, the process of change is dealt with in really meaningful ways in this series. And the reason that I think it's so effective is because there are so many different characters in this miniseries, and the way that they deal with the issues in their lives, which are all very different, are in themselves very different, but they still meditate and turn on the same central ideas, the process of change, the idea of family, and yes, I would say transgenerational trauma, because on the one hand, we have Pryor Walter.
Yes.
And I think the name Pryor, this idea of, you know, before mm-hmm. is really kind of telling, but he also has these visions of his ancestors coming to him.
That's right, because Pryor Walter, he grows up knowing that he's the 52nd Pryor in the Walter family.
Well, there you go.
Going back to 1066. So if nothing else, there is that transfer of family story or family legend and family trauma that he has experienced coming down to him 52 generations later as the 52nd prior Walter.
But then you also have Harper, who is dealing with her own beliefs in the context of, I would say, Mormonism.
That's right. So Harper is the wife
of Joe.
Of Joe.
Is it
Joe? Of Joe.
Patrick Wilson.
Who is definitely the eye candy in Angels of America, I have to say. That's me going low.
Yeah.
And
I don't think many people would disagree with you.
And of course, Joe is struggling with his own sexual identity. So he has repressed his homosexuality, and this has a direct impact on Harper and on Harper's own happiness. And so we see a direct impact of that on that repression, which Joe is experiencing that repression due to his own Mormonism. So he's been taught that homosexuality is a very grave sin. So he's sought to repress that. And he's tried to hide that by marrying Harper.
And then, of course,
there
is, of course, as well, Pryor's boyfriend, Lois, who is Jewish.
That's right. That's our Jewish theme.
And the series really starts off with the death of his grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that is processed. And that really sets the stage for a lot of action, certainly within the first act.
That's right.
And Meryl Streep, of course, plays a rabbi, and she gives this stirring eulogy that sets out so many of the themes in the miniseries, but so aptly, I think, captures this idea of transgenerational trauma, this idea that, I think, as Meryl Streep puts it, in you she is. So this is Meryl Streep playing the rabbi in Angels in America.
We are here this morning to pay respects at the passing of Sarah Ironson. She was not a person, but a whole kind of a person. The ones that crossed the ocean, that brought with us to America the villages of Russia and Lithuania. And how we struggled, and how we fought for the family. For the Jewish home, descendants of this immigrant woman, you do not grow up in America. You and your children and their children with the Goyish names, you do not live in America. No such place exists. Your clay is the clay of some Litvak shtetl. Your air, the air of the steppes. Because she carried that old world on her back across the ocean in a boat. And she put it down on Grand Concourse Avenue. On Flatbush. You can never make that crossing that she made. For such great voyages in this world do not anymore exist. But every day of your lives, the miles that voyage from that place to this one, you cross. Every day. You understand me? In you, that journey is.
Wow, such a powerful introduction to what is a powerful, powerful miniseries.
Absolutely. I mean, that opening scene really does raise the goosebumps. And seeing Meryl Streep play an elderly rabbi, she's almost unrecognizable, but it does an amazing job.
But I think these ideas are really picked up on, you know, we've been looking mainly at TV series this evening, but there are a number of films that deal with these ideas in really meaningful ways as well. Beginners, which we looked at a couple of weeks ago when we were doing a show for Victorian Seniors Festival.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's quite clear that there's been a lot of trauma in the lives of Christopher Plummer and his wife in this film. And clearly Ewan McGregor's character is suffering for that. You know, he can't have a relationship because his parents couldn't have a relationship.
That's right. He didn't have a positive. He didn't have positive role model, and there were the secrets and the elephant in the room in his parents' relationship, and it took him decades later for him to finally realize what was going on, and that was really due to his own father actually accepting his own sexuality, yes, and coming
but
out.
It was about this process, it was about this journey, and that's something that the eulogy from Meryl Streep in Angels in America really taps into, this idea of a journey, and that is something that's it's picked up in all of the texts we've been looking at this evening, even in Transparent. Josh, one of the Pfefferman children, goes on this great car journey, that literally. And that final scene that we heard earlier in the program, where Shelley kind of apprehends her own trauma, is on a cruise boat. You know, it's, I think it's no accident.
You know what? It was literally a voyage of discovery for Shelley. On that one, yes.
Yeah, sure. I mean, but that's and this process of journey comes up again in Angels in America, doesn't it? When Harper is talking to this.
Her imaginary friend?
Yeah, a forebearer, a Mormon forebearer.
Oh, yes.
And they're talking about the journey across America, and talking about how painful it is, when really I think they're talking about this process. I think you said earlier in the program, this process of metamorphosis, of transparency, of becoming transparent.
That's it.
So it all kind of neatly ties up in the end. It's funny because there are a lot of texts that we wanted to get to look at this evening that we didn't.
That's
chief
right.
Amongst those, I think, Death in Love.
Death in Love. If there is ever a film that can that
deals
confronts
with,
transgeneration trauma head on, it is this.
Death in Love. Yeah. And I think because it is such a big topic, the film doesn't quite get there. I know you loved it.
Oh, I thought it was brilliant.
You found it compelling.
Yeah.
But look, I struggled with it. I think it's a powerful piece of storytelling just because some of these issues are so transparent in the story. But I do think that Boaz Yenkin, the director, just bit off a little bit more than he could chew, which is why subsequently he's written, I think, The Prince of Persia and
Now You See Me 1 and 2
and Dirty Dancing.
some lightweight stuff, but it's definitely worth watching Death in Love.
Well, we've just about run out of time. That's it for another week on Outtakes. You're listening to Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.